today's Institute for Healthcare Improvement program is titled Framework, Leadership, and Setup for Spread. And at this time, it's my pleasure to introduce your IHI moderator for today, Ms. Marie Schall. Marie is the Director of Office Practices and Outpatient Settings Domain of the Institute of Health for Healthcare Improvement's Impact Network. Marie has also directed a national project to spread access improvement within the Veterans Health Administration and serves as a faculty member for the IHI's Breakthrough Series College. Her prior experience includes serving as assistant clinical coordinator with the Peer Review Organization of New Jersey and also as director of research for the Health Research and Educational Trust of New Jersey, a nonprofit affiliate of the New Jersey Hospital Association. Marie earned her master's degree in sociology from Rutgers University and has completed coursework for her doctorate at New York University. Marie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kurt. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this second in our series of calls on SPRID. I'm going to introduce the topic for the call and then introduce our guest speakers who will be sharing the experience from their organizations about SPRID. Let me first review what the objectives for today's call are. This is on the slide that's on the bottom of page one in your handout material. Basically, what we would like to do on today's call is to introduce the key components of a strategy for spreading improvements. These components build on the conceptual ideas that Dr. Van de Ven shared with us on the call last week, and I'll be talking more about what those connections are. Then we will move to a more focused discussion about two of the components of the strategy for SPRED that I'll be introducing, specifically the leadership's role in SPRED and one of the important aspects of that leadership's role, which is in the setup that's important for getting a good start with your SPRED plans. And then as part of that, we'll be learning about and hearing about the experience from two healthcare systems, specifically about the leadership role and the setup that they did to support their SPRED activities. So those are the objectives for the call today. Before I actually move into talking about the framework for SPRED that I'd like to introduce, I do want to just, refer back to Dr. Van de Ven's conversation with us last week, review some of the concepts that that he talked about because they lay a wonderful foundation for what we're going to be building on in this call and in the calls to come in this series. If you remember, Dr. Van de Ven focused on what he considers the factors, the major factors that influence the adoption and diffusion of innovation, and he highlighted three factors. One is the characteristics of the innovation itself. Secondly is the role that the individuals play, and thirdly is the factors related to an organization or to a community in which the spread is going to occur. And if you remember, in terms of innovation, Dr. Van de Ven focused on some of the concepts from Everett Rogers and some of the ones that he mentioned that are important for the diffusion of innovation are whether or not the innovation has relative advantage, so whether it's seen as better than the old system, whether the innovation is compatible with existing practices and culture within the organization, whether the innovation is easy to understand, whether people are given an opportunity to try it, and finally, whether the adopters are given the ability to revise the innovation as needed to fit their local needs. So those are all factors that contribute to the rapid spread of innovation that relate to the characteristics of the innovation itself. In terms of individuals, he mentioned several things that either can impede or encourage innovation. And some of the things that work against individuals being willing to try new innovations include if the innovation is not well understood by the individuals, if the cost of the innovation is seen as greater than the benefit, and whether or not people feel frightened or threatened by the change. Conversely, some of the things that he mentioned that are more likely, that when they exist, an individual is more likely to be open to innovation include whether or not a reason is given to the person as to why the innovation is likely to benefit them and the system. whether or not the innovation was requested by somebody that they know, a friend or a peer. And another factor that he mentioned that I think is interesting is whether or not it's seen as the opportunity that the innovation represents is seen as scarce or hard to obtain. So in other words, there's kind of a pull system or a demand for that people value this new thing that's being introduced. And lastly, in terms of the organization or the community factors that can influence adoption and innovation, you mentioned that it's important to create an infrastructure for creating collective advantage. And we're going to be focusing quite a bit today on this issue of infrastructure and how organizations can put things in place which really encourage this idea of collective advantage, or this very interesting idea that he introduced last week in terms of running in packs. And so those are some of the ideas that he introduced and that build actually very well into the framework that I want to introduce now. If you move to the next, the slides that are on page 2 and the top slide, this is actually a visual, a representation of the way that Everett Rogers in his book, Diffusion of Innovation, describes what adoption or spread is about. That Everett Rogers says that adoption is really taking better ideas, a new way of doing things, an innovation, if you will, that's communicated in a certain way through a social system over time. And this, I think, in a very sort of succinct way, really explains what adoption or spread is all about. About 2 years ago, IHI began to look more deeply into this issue of spread and adoption of innovation. We found that in the work that we were doing as part of the Breakthrough Series Collaborative, that organizations were really needing and wanting more information, more guidance in terms of how to leverage the wonderful improvements that they were making as part of the collaborative experience. But as the collaboratives ended, the organizations wanted to take that those improvements and leverage them in their organization and spread what was done in the collaborative teams to others. And so we saw that there was a need for us to really develop our thinking and pull together both the research from within healthcare and other industries, as well as the rich experience that had been beginning to grow within the healthcare industry around spread. And it's really the result of that work that's still really ongoing that you see in this slide that's at the bottom of page 2, which is a graphic representation of what we call a framework for spread. And if I can just highlight the factors or the elements that we've seen from the research that we did and the discussions that we've had with organizations that have had experience with spread, it seems to us that the components that are represented on this slide really represent the things that seem like are important. They need to be in place in order for spread to occur effectively. So the components are just looking, maybe starting at the top, and then starting with the leadership component, which we are going to speak about today, and then moving from the left to the right. We arranged the slide to represent or to better provide guidance to organizations in terms of a sequence, a rough sequence of how organizations can begin to plan and carry out their spread activity. So early on in the process, there's the identification of better ideas. There's a setup component, which is a large component of what the leadership's responsibility is. There's a measurement and feedback and a knowledge management component, which are part of a large kind of loop factor, which feeds from the social system, which is on the right-hand side of the slide, back through the system. So it's a continuous learning process of understanding how the spread process is occurring and how the measurement looks, how the progress in making this, guiding the spread is occurring. And then really at the center of the slide here is what we call successful sites. So they're pilot sites, or they might be collaborative sites that have been involved in a collaborative project in some way, not necessarily, but The idea here is that organizations often need an example of an innovation that's been shown to work in their particular system, and that it's that experience, it's that the experience of that successful site, which is then spread through the social system, through the small circles that are represented there in the social system, and that's done through the communication strategies. So this slide really highlights the major factors that really need to be taken into account as you plan and carry out your spread activities. And we have actually organized this series of calls for the calls to action to each week focus on a different component of this framework for spread. And if you move to the slide that's at the top of page 3, you'll see some of the detail that's involved in each of the components. And what I'm going to do in just the next few moments is to, I guess in a sense, sort of whet your appetites for what you'll be hearing on today's call in terms of leadership and the setup components, but also give you an idea of how those two components fit into the overall framework. So I'm going to share with you a little bit more detail about some of the other components as well that you'll be hearing about on subsequent calls. So each of the boxes that are highlighted are also blown up in terms of the slides that follow. So if you direct your attention to the slide that's at the bottom of page 3, as I talk about leadership's role in spread, and these are some of the issues and some of the factors that are part of leadership's role in spread, and these will be gone into in more detail with our speakers after I've finished with my remarks. But basically, the leadership's role in spread involves identifying and assuring the organizations that, that the topic, that the issue, that the innovation that's being spread is one that's of strategic importance. And on top of this, recognizing that it's of importance, but without putting in place some mechanisms and building the infrastructure, if you will, to ensure that something happens based on this proclamation that this topic is one that's of strategic initiative, a strategic importance to the organization, without having an executive sponsor assigned, without having a day-to-day manager who is identified and whose responsibility it is to guide this this process, and without making sure that the goals and incentives in your organizations are aligned to support the spread of the innovation. Those are all important pieces of what the leadership needs to do as part of beginning the work of an organization for spread. And then more specifically, in terms of the actual setup, once those pieces are in place, the setup involves identifying where the, if you refer back to the slide at the top of the page, where those little circles are, identifying the target population. So what are those circles? Identifying them numerically, knowing exactly how many sites that you want to spread to, and knowing, having some kind of general time frame in terms of when you would like to be able to introduce the innovation to those sites. So understanding your target population, making sure, really asking the question whether the pilot site is successful. So we often say that in order to spread, you have to have something to spread. And so having a successful experience by the pilot site is an important part of the setup. Identifying the key groups who will be making the adoption decisions within the target population. So if you're spreading to clinics, who is it in those clinics that are key to making the decisions and knowing who those people are, the categories of people as well as individuals ahead of time. And then, as I mentioned, having some type of overall strategy, initial strategy for reaching all the sites. Let me say a little bit more about planning to reach the target population, which is the slide, which is at the top of page 4. What are some of the things to think about as you plan how to reach the sites that you know need to be reached by this innovation? As I mentioned, it's identifying who will make the adoption decision within those sites. And from our experience, there seem to be several things that should be considered or could be considered as you plan the sequence for moving into the target population. One really interesting issue, and we may talk about this more as we move into the latter part of this call and another call, subsequent calls, is the difference between coverage and completeness. So in other words, if part of improving patient safety involves doing five or six key things, you can have a plan where you will plan to spread all six of them at the same time to all the sites, or to one site and then another and phase them in. Or you can have a plan of saying, there's one change that seems like it's really ripe, it's ready, people want to do it, so let's spread that one to all the sites and do that in a more rapid fashion, and then spread each additional change or a series of changes after that. So the difference between how you spread coverage versus completeness would obviously affect your plan for reaching the target population, how you would reach them, over what period of time, and which of the changes that are part of possibly an overall package of changes. Some other things to consider in terms of the spread to the target population is how you can best optimize the learning, bringing new sites if they're slightly different sites, if they're specialty practices versus primary care practices, if they're med-surg units versus ICUs, the relationship of the units to the pilot sites. So does it make sense to spread from a primary care practice to a specialty practice because there's a connection there with the referral of patients? These are all things to consider in terms of your particular situations, whether or not a champion exists or could be developed in the target populations, and which ones of the target populations are more likely to have these champions. And, of course, the availability of resources, and I know the speakers that are following me will speak to some of these issues. Beyond the issue of leadership and some of the factors that I've mentioned that are included in the setup for spread, there are some additional considerations that were represented in the visual of the framework. And these additional considerations are highlighted at the bottom of page 4, and they include developing the communication plan, strengthening the social system, and then developing the measurement and feedback system. And as I said, these are all issues that we will be talking more about on subsequent calls. So I think there are additional slides in your packet which go into a little bit more detail on each of these. But I think so in the interest of moving along with our discussion and our focus on leadership and setup, and I think wanting to get into some of the particular examples that our speakers can speak to, I think what I'd like to do now is to introduce our first speaker, and so that he can share with you the experience from his organization. So let me introduce Dr. St. Anthony Amofa, who is the director of the Helen Bentley Family Health Center. And Dr. Amofa has given multiple presentations on spreading change nationally and locally. He holds an MBA in Health Services Administration and is certified in healthcare quality management, risk management, and managed care. He also coordinates the Helen Bentley's Family Health Center's performance improvement activities. The center participates in the Bureau of Primary Health Care Cardiovascular Disease Collaborative. So at this point, let me introduce Dr. Amofa, and we're looking forward to your comments.
Thank you very much, Marie. Good afternoon, I guess, from my end. All right, so like Marie said, my topic is spreading change and the leadership role in the setup and assessing readiness for spread. What I'm going to attempt to do is to share with you our experience in preparing for spread, some learned through our mistakes, and others that we learned through interactions with other organizations and through listening to sessions like this. We're reminded of certain powerful statements made by some of our past leaders in this country and other countries. One, for example, that Machiavelli said that kind of always reminds me of how difficult change is. And I quote, "It must be remembered that there is nothing more difficult to plan, more doubtful of success, or more dangerous to manage than the creation of a new system. For the initiator has the enmity of all who would profit by the preservation of the old institutions, and merely lukewarm defenders in those who would gain by the new ones." Quote. And Woodrow Wilson didn't make it any easier when he said that if you want to make enemies, try to change something. There's no question that change is difficult. And when you look at literature as well, it says that you read statements like that over 90, over over 70% of projects in organizations either fail totally or get completed at least 3 to 6 months after the original target date. So when you hear things like this, you're not surprised that IHR has made significant investment in these breakthrough series. And the question we then ask ourselves is, well, how do we make sure that we will be one of the successful 30% or so? Or how do we increase the chances of success? One of the things Mary also talked about and will be emphasized throughout most of these series, I think, is that when you look at all the factors that help increase the chances of success, there's one thing that you take away from it, that the process of managing the change or the process of implementing the innovation is probably as important as the innovativeness of the new model you're trying to implement. A point that we should always put in front of us and mind ourselves of. And what I like to suggest is that when you look at that process of implementing a change, there are probably three components of it that I think also come out in these discussions. There's that process of preparing for the change itself, and there are a whole set of techniques of rolling out the change, and then a whole different set of strategies for sustaining the change. Again, some of what you hear about in this and other presentations. What I'm going to talk about is that process of preparing for change, and hence my objective, which is to understand what is needed to successfully prepare for a spread effort. To get to that objective, in terms of outline, I'll talk about the requirements of preparing for a spread effort, including selection of a spread team and the performance of a rigorous readiness assessment. And at the end, we'll lead into the next aspect of the discussion, which is developing a spread plan by the next speaker. So if you move to page 10, the slide on the bottom, I believe that the first step, even before this, is as Mary had said, that the organization would typically have initially defined their goal. Where are we now and where do we want to be? Once we've defined that, the next step becomes selection of a spread team. Your goals will define the kind of team you're going to select. And this step is such an important step because this is the team that is really going to coach or coordinate others or coordinate this project itself. An effective spread team is going to help to keep plans moving forward, to keep everybody focused, and very importantly, to serve as a reminder when we get distracted. Again, making the point that as organizational leaders and staff members, we tend to have tons of balls that we have to juggle. And nonetheless, there is that kind of a coordinating, effective team keeping things in front of us. We might get distracted by a grant that is applied for, our daily routine, our daily work, and so on. But I think that the key thing is having a team that is going to be effective enough to prevent us from getting distracted in the process of implementing the change. In terms of membership, the suggestion is that you look at some members from the old team, or what we would call the pilot team, and then some new members from the new team. And at a minimum, especially if this is it's changing a major healthcare improvement that's going to involve providers, that we include a provider from the pilot team, a key person who's going to help to bring along the other providers in the new team and in the target population. It's also important to have a senior leader from the previous on the pilot team, and probably another team member, maybe the team leader if that is a possibility. But in terms of the new members, I think that one critical person that is always of value to bring on board such a spread team if it's an office manager or an operations manager, somebody who has that level of influence and responsibility for daily operations in the unit that you're spreading to. I think that makes a very key component, a very crucial component in the selection of the spread team and work. The literature describes, and I think in this series, we talk about desirable new member characteristics, but the one that we found very helpful in our spread plan was enthusiasm. That having just one or two members who had the great skill of making things fun, willingness to share even the slightest successes with the rest of the group, is a very powerful characteristic that I think that we may want to take advantage of. When we've selected our spread team, the next step then is to ask the question, are we really ready to spread this? What I'm going to do is to go through an algorithm that, again, through our learning, our mistakes, experiences with others, we've come up with that look at specific helpful questions that one should really spend time to ask and address in the process of preparing to spread improvement or innovation. This readiness assessment, I like to suggest, should be done by the new team. that hopefully should include a senior leader, possibly an executive director. And it's so important to go through this assessment and not, again, jump to implement the change. Because in that process, it helps the team to bond. With any new team, you're going to go through the developmental stages of growth. And, you know, it's very helpful to quickly move through the storming phases of group development. And I think that this process of going through the readiness assessment, if for no other reason, at least helps the team to bond. But also, potential barriers are addressed or anticipated. And I think that if you involve senior leadership, it's an opportunity for them to be either more educated about details of processes, or at least to get their buy-in and internalization of what is about to happen. On page 12, the slide on the top, the first question that I, you know, would like to suggest you ask is, well, first, did this pilot team succeed? Question that one has to really attempt to answer. Something that the new team must do. Now, there are many different ways of looking at success. And the framework that I find most interesting is the one that Donna Bedian proposed. And it's looking at, well, the outcomes measures, if this improvement had presented such measures as an option for tracking progress, or process measures, or at least if in the process of implementing that change in a small-scale basis, the pilot team was able to help to develop an appropriate supporting structure or the appropriate policies and procedures that would help support spreading of that innovation. Let's also remember that outcomes measures include qualitative outcomes measures. For example, comments from patients, success stories. So in attempting to answer the question, it's very important to tease out any measures of success that one can showcase. Again, the importance of doing this is that it helps to motivate the new team members, the senior leader and other staff, and make them feel that, well, this change is really going to be beneficial, that what we're spending is improvement and not just additional stress. But the other reason that I think this is so important to address and answer is that if you're able to showcase the pilot team's success, it lends credibility to changes made. And as organizational leaders, it is critical that with any change that we're going to implement, that we remember that if we're not able to make it happen, there's always a risk of losing some credibility. So having that in mind, it's kind of important to address this question. When you look at lots of the projects that fail or take too long to happen, and you do a root cause analysis of some of the causes of it, you find that it tends to drill down to two main things: the lack of visible management support and the lack of an effective team leadership or team empowerment, the team and management support. I think that even if you drill down the team leadership and empowerment back further, you're going to get back to visible management support. So understanding that then, if the answer is no, that you really cannot say confidently that the pilot team was successful, then in terms of solutions, first step, management must assume ownership. This is not the pilot team's, it's not for the pilot team to absorb this. And it is probably a time to go back to the drawing board and start testing that innovation or improvement all over again. You're probably not ready to spread. But if you can confidently say yes, then the next question that the new team should probably address is the plan change in the organization's strategic plan? If we can go to page 13. So let's explore that for a second. Is a plan change in the organization's strategic plan? Now, for this to be a useful step in preparing for spreading any innovation or improvement, number one, the center must have an effective strategic plan. And number two, the plan change or improvement must be included in it. I like to define an effective strategic plan as one that is living and breathing, not one that sits on the shelf and is developed only because our funding agency said we should, or that is only looked at when there's going to be a monitoring visit, or a JCO visit or something like that. I like to define a living, breathing strategic plan as one that truly reflects the board and management's vision, one that is shared regularly with middle management, and is translated into a departmental work plan with line staff involvement, and very importantly, one that is evaluated periodically. Now, if you you cannot say yes to that. If the answer to that is a no, no meaning that either there's no such effective strategic plan or that the plan change is not in it, and it presents appropriate solutions. Either the organizations have to look at developing such a strategic plan that includes all the things that are important to the organization, or that the plan change must be included in it if it truly reflects the vision and the mission. And in terms of team members, a practical way of doing this sometimes is a formal proposal to senior management or the board saying that, well, this is something that you've asked us to implement. And we think that for us to be able to for us to be successful, we need to see elements of this in the strategic plan that you also evaluate at your level. If the new team can confidently say yes to this question, then in terms of assessing your readiness for spread, the next logical question is, are these measures included in the performance improvement plan? Let's look at page 13 and explore this particular issue. Are measures included in the PI plan? Again, a very important question to ask, because when you do that, it makes sure that the innovation or the improvement is in the staff's horizon. That is assuming that your PI plan is something that you share with staff or staff has access to. Also, since most of us tend to have staff involved in our PI processes, it's a very neat way of making sure that there's input from the staff in the trenches. In terms of what an effective PI plan is, I think that typically speaking, you have a PI plan that is effective if it defines the activities that you look at in a way that that may be presented as a calendar. Everybody knows what things are due to be reviewed, what month, who's responsible to obtain that data or provide that feedback, mechanisms to ensure that if this person is not doing their work, there's accountability in terms of follow-up. It defines the projects that are discussed with the staff and when, and also defines the flow of reports throughout the system. Again, for an organization to be effective in rolling out a plan and sustaining changes is obviously crucial that those measures must be in the organization's PI plan. But if you cannot say yes to that, if the answer to that is a no, then the team probably has to look at a formal proposal to the PI committee, summarizing the importance of what we're doing, you know, giving the details of the goals and objectives and how we're going to evaluate this, and asking that it be included in the PI calendar of activities, and probably asking also that this be a standing agenda item, if not monthly, at least quarterly. Again, this is not usually a problem for most organizations because for any improvement, I think the first place that we tend to find it is usually in the PI plan. But if the team, this new spread team, can confidently say yes, the measures are in there, then the next question, or next probably most logical question is, well, can staff maintain a registry or the supporting database or whatever mechanism you're using to measure progress and success? So let's look at that on page 15. When you look at the reasons why we sometimes are unable to maintain the database that, like Marie said, is a critical component of this spread setup and being able to spread anything, that part that says measurement and feedback, sometimes it's because there's no assigned primary responsibility for obtaining that data or inputting that data in an MIS system or something like that. And sometimes We may not have a delivery system that accommodates or that makes it easy or possible for us to track that data on an ongoing productive basis. So if that is a problem, that if we think that staff cannot maintain the registry, we need to address that. And it means looking at assigning a primary responsibility for something that is going to be so important to the organization, or defining a structure or patient flow or form flow that can more appropriately support a potential spread in data that is going to be collected, or recruit somebody who's going to be responsible for that as a last ditch stand if you cannot really use existing resources to make it happen. But typically, when we search through our processes, you know, with a fine tooth comb, we sometimes able to identify resources in house that can help us to do this. Sometimes it may be resources that are outside a given department that is responsible for implementing this change. For example, what we did in an organization was when we looked at spreading at the changes that we're making in the cardiovascular collaborative, we realized that the clinical support staff were too stretched out to do the data entry. So we looked at an administrative clerk, and I thought, you know, well, my assistant, actually, I didn't need 1.0 FTE. I really need to have a half time to be able to process the things that she did for me. And she was willing, and we had her be the person responsible for managing the data. That has worked literally perfectly. So the point there is that to ask that question, that we're going to spread and it's going to require collection and aggregation and processing of significant amounts of data, and is somebody going to be responsible for this, or can we maintain this? And if not, addressing that question before we begin rolling out, and then finding out that we're not really ready for that. Next question, if you've been able to say yes to this, is someone in leadership responsible for spread? I think the previous presentation and the summary from Marie just talks about the fact that this is such a critical step that we really should not rule anything out without asking ourselves that question in assessing our readiness for spread. Why is this important? I don't have to make that point, but we realize that leadership is critical to help overcome barriers. That one of the things we are able to convey to staff is that if the senior leader is really part of this process, it must be important. And again, it helps in the buy-in process later on. Well, who are we looking at? Again, it depends on organization. And looking at maybe a board member, the CEO, him or herself, the chief operations officer, chief medical officer, essentially somebody who is influential across departments. That is critical. There's a lot, when you want to improve or spread improvement, you're likely going to span departments and need somebody who's really influential. The person must believe in the innovation, not just superficially, but you must really have a sense of this person's belief in what is happening and having internalized that. And I think very importantly, another characteristic is the person must be knowledgeable of chain concepts. The person must be knowledgeable about PDSAs and brainstorming and all the things that come with really implementing change and trying to reduce a variation in thinking or bring people to the same page when there are differences and the concepts that are applicable to helping that process happen. I think that's critical. So if there's nobody in leadership responsible for spread, that responsibility has to be assigned. And it's not a bad idea for the person to have attended, at least currently or in the past, some training sessions on innovation and the principles of spreading them. Because, you know, you may know so much, but any time you listen to these kinds of discussions, you get rejuvenated. You're reminded of these principles and concepts. And in some of Marie's discussion, I think the point was clearly made. And so it is important then that this person have a lot of experience in change concepts and very helpfully, if possible, spreading this particular improvement. Next, if someone in leadership has been assigned the primary responsibility for this, and let me just say that in which case it would mean that this person is willing and prepared to assume ownership for failure, but is willing and able and strong enough to delegate or give credit for success to the other team members, then the next question is, are there any major potential distractions? A very important question, because again, in most of organizations, at any particular point in time, we have either a JCO survey coming up, a major financial or other clinical audit, corporate right-sizing, and we need to look at making change or spreading improvement in the context of such potential major distractions. One of the mistakes sometimes we make as managers is that sometimes we shift our focus, our priorities too quickly, and that can be very risky when we're trying to spread an improvement that is very important to us. So if there's such a major distraction, well, there are two possibilities. Either you want to continue with spreading the improvement or you're going to wait. Now, if you're going to consider going on, then it's very important that we be mindful of the workload of the team that is going to be responsible for spreading this and others who are going to be responsible for implementing the change. Because a lot of the time, the same people who have that responsibility for spreading such improvements may have the responsibility of working with whatever other project that is coming up. If we want to wait, we want to hold off until this distraction is out of the way, it's very important to define a period of time when we're going to wait. So sometimes, it says there's JCO survey coming up, you want to wait till after that happens, voice spread improvement. Sometimes 3, 4, 5, 6 months after this distraction out of the way, we may forget to come back to addressing this issue. So it's very important then to define a time frame where we're going to hold for this reason, probably for this specific period of time. So what have I said? Guess what I've said is, looking at page 17 on the top, is that when you're ready to spread innovation or improvement, understanding that this is very difficult and challenging, and that 70% of projects will fail or take longer to be completed, there's a whole set of processes that you have to go through that is discussed at length in all of these breakthrough series. That after we have defined a specific goal, what we want to do, knowing where we are now, the first step is defining who are going to be members of this team that's going to help us to spread this innovation, and understanding that characteristics like enthusiasm are very helpful. And making sure that provider champions are members if this involves provider work. Having done that then, it is very helpful to go through a series of questions that we have to be very comfortable with in answering yes to. That, if we can say yes to, would help to increase the chances of our success when we are ready to roll out that change. We said that we need to answer the question, did the pilot team succeed? And tease out measures of success that we're comfortable with, otherwise we're not ready. If we can say yes to that, then we ask ourselves, is the plan change in the organization's strategic plan? Understanding that this is a critical component of the setup for spread, as we've heard from Marie and others, that it must be an effective, living, breathing strategic plan that if we include in spreading this innovation, you're likely to be successful. We've also said that once you have this, it's very important that this is translated into the PI plan, which then allows us an opportunity for staff to give input and to know what's going on. If we can say yes to that, then the next question is, can we maintain the registry or supporting database or the data collection or aggregation or processing that this is going to require? If we can comfortably say yes to that, we have people responsible, we have appropriate flows to support it. The next question would be, is someone in leadership responsible for spread? Somebody who is influential, believes in the model you're trying to spread or the new management model you're trying to implement, the person who is knowledgeable in change concepts. If you do have somebody like that, or if you don't, if you go ahead and assign that, then the next question is, are there any major potential distractions? Making sure that you've thought through that and you have a game plan whether you want to go ahead or not. So it's only when you've been able to say comfortably yes to these questions, or that there are no major potential distractions, that I believe you can confidently say that there's at least a 30% chance, or at least you're within the 30% chance that we see in the literature of being ready to spread and being successful implementing change. Essentially, that's what I wanted to share with the group. What we did, and again, we came up with this algorithm after learning from our mistakes and spreading changes, and realizing that we should have gone back to address some of these issues before moving forward. And because we did not, we started to face difficulty that we did not have to face, that we could have prepared ourselves for. I'd like to suggest that even though we know that we sometimes feel ready to spread and we feel very comfortable in that, going through such a readiness assessment makes sure, and of course that being done by members that were not part of the pilot team, helps to make sure that difficult, maybe unpleasant questions are asked and the answers to them are addressed before we go ahead and spread. That is my discussion for the morning. In terms of looking at, well, where do you go from here? Once you've gone through preparing for spread and you get to a point where you have to, well, develop a plan for spread and rolling it out, and I think that our next speaker will discuss some concepts and critical issues that are helpful here in terms of how you roll out a plan and the experiences in doing that for the organization. Thank you.
St. Anthony, thank you very much for your presentation. We're going to move on to Karen McKinley, and we're going to ask you to just make note of any questions that may have come up while I was speaking or while St. Anthony was speaking. We feel that each of these presentations build on each other, and it may be a more fruitful discussion if we hold the questions till the end. So at this point, let me introduce Karen McKinley. She is the Vice President of the Division of Systems, Access, and Care Management in the Geisinger Health System. She's operationally responsible in collaboration with her physician partner for the sections of patient access, the Access Center, care management, access staff education, performance improvement, data analysis, reporting, patient safety, patient education.